You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
A happy Monday to you. We're inching closer to Christmas. We're also inching closer to the end of the transfer portal, or at least the early transfer portal. I tell you, I'm so sick of the transfer portal. I really am. I was telling my wife last night, I said, I think it would be easier to be the beat reporter for the high school dating scene at Fayetteville High School than to keep up with all of this nonsense that's going on in the transfer portal. Latest from Arkansas side, lots of commitments. We'll get to those. But the big story this morning is that Braylon Russell is apparently back in the transfer portal. The Arkansas running back, freshman running back, he was in, then he was out. Now he's apparently back in. And I don't think there's any coming out of the transfer portal and coming back to Arkansas after you pulled this thing twice. Russell, you know, he's the latest. And I don't think you call him a starter, even though, you know, he had some games where he had some starter-like carries. He may have started the Mississippi State game, I'm not sure, at a big game down there in Starkville. But the point being, Christina Long here with me now, is that, you know, this is another player who is a name that a lot of people were excited about for the future, and now it looks like they're not going to have him. But I don't see him being any different than some of these other players who, when you look at their stats, they are not irreplaceable stats. Long-term, I guess, I don't know how to look at this. I look at it two ways. There's a lot of potential there, yes. I don't think you want somebody in your program who doesn't want to be there. And I think you're better off as a program if you have somebody who's not fully vested in your team, then get them out of there and bring somebody else in that wants to be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer about, I think the thing about Russell that's so disappointing is because of how much potential he showed, because of how much excitement there was about him, especially being an in-state guy. You know, we've talked a lot, just, you know, you've written about it, we've talked about it amongst ourselves about Arkansas and its sort of lack of in-state players. And he was a guy that they were really excited about from within Arkansas. And so I think that's why it feels like such a big hit, because we saw him do so many promising things this year. But I think that you're right that he is not necessarily irreplaceable from a production standpoint, especially. And you know, I think you're right. I think that's something that Coach Pittman feels strongly about. Or at least when he talked last week, it sounded like he felt strongly about, with, you know, having guys that want to be here. And, you know, he talked about the importance of leaving the right way. Now, we don't know what the internal conversations between Braylon Russell and the coaches have been like, so we don't really know if this was considered the right way. But it certainly looks strange having gone in and out and in and out of the portal. So, I mean, I think that's why it feels so disappointing from, you know, a fan perspective, is because of how much promise he showed and because he was looking like he was going to be another Arkansas guy that was a big contributor. But I think you're right that it's not like they can't get a guy with similar ability out of the transfer portal.
47 carries, 304 yards, 2 touchdowns. You ought to be able to find that from the transfer portal.
Yeah. And I think they're, you know, I think they offered a running back yesterday. You know, they offered two. Not going to wait around. They're going to try to get, you know, they were able to get Jaquindon Jackson this year. We talked about it last week about how it looked like a disaster with Rocket Sanders leaving, but he'd had a pretty bad season in his last year at Arkansas, and Jaquindon was better than Rocket was in Rocket's final season. So, you know, they have the ability, they have the potential to recruit well. It's just a matter of if they do. You know, that's the hard part about being a coach right now, is evaluating properly, then developing properly, you know, but that's their job. That's why they're here.
I should say they have offered at least one. They've got a second one on a visit. I don't know if he has an offer, but yesterday Arkansas offered Bowling Green running back Tarion Stewart. He's an older player. I think he'll be a fifth year player. And then they also have on a visit right now, this is according to Richard Davenport, a Texas State transfer running back named Ishmael Mahdi. And I don't know if there's been an offer.
I remember him.
There.
I remember him from, was he at Minnesota? I remember him
possibly from
somewhere.
You know, if you ask me right now, hey, was this guy at this school? I'd say, well, there's a chance. I mean, because everybody's.
Yeah. I mean, okay, I'm wrong about Minnesota. I remember him from Texas high school football when I covered them, covered high schools for the Dallas Morning News. I remember him. Yeah, he was really good.
Okay.
So that's an exciting guy to watch.
Yeah, I mean, on3.com says he's the number 3 running back in the transfer portal. But like I said, everybody changes teams so often that it wouldn't shock
right.
me if somebody, hey, did he play for Minnesota?
Well, yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
did he play for Harding? There's a chance. I'm so exasperated with the transfer portal. I think the portal window is open for too long. and it gives players the ability maybe to overthink whatever decision that they've made is. I think if you're going to have the transfer portal open, open it up and then close that sucker down after 4 or 5 days. And then, you know, let all the nonsense play out that has to play out, and let's move on with our lives. But this whole, I'm in, I'm out, now I'm back in. I mean, just decide, but make it open for 1 day. Make it open for 1 day. You know, because you know what? You've probably been thinking about this for 2 or 3 months anyway. Make it open for 1 day. Everybody jump in, and you miss the boat, you miss the boat. Mm-hmm. You can jump back in the spring. The 20 days of this, as teams are trying to recruit other players, as they're trying to prepare for bowl games, as they're trying to do everything else that's going on this time of year. I mean, my God, did they shop for holiday gifts? Do they have time?
No.
But seriously, it is crazy. It is absolutely crazy. And there's no way that anybody can think that the constant transfer news that's in the news cycle is good for this sport. And it goes back to something I've said a number of times here. It's like, where is the leadership where they jump in and say, look, this is bad for our game. We've got to do something to fix this for our game. And I know they've done some things like, you know, I think the portal window used to be like 45 days in a school year. Now they cut it down to 30. Well, then cut it down, you know, more. But the portal thing, it's hammering programs, number one, from a real world personnel perspective, but it's also killing them in terms of their fan bases are just, they're becoming apathetic mm-hmm. about all this that they're reading about every day.
Yeah. I mean, you hear it from fans all the time that they feel like they don't know the players on the team. You know, it's different. It's a little bit different in football. But you know, like with basketball, you know, you get a whole new roster every year and it feels like you don't even know these guys. And so, you know, you hear that from fans all the time. You know, I don't think coaches are happy with this either. I think they're worn out, exhausted, burnt out. I think it goes back to, you know, college football has no central authority, right? I mean, it's not Charlie Baker, the president of the NCAA. It's not the executive director of the college football playoff. You know, there's just so many different interests and there's no like supreme adult in the room saying this is what we're going to do, setting the calendar. There's just so many different ideas and interests kind of competing. And so that's why, you know, you have such a mess and why it feels like it's different every year. You know, we've got the recruiting windows are changing all the time because they're still trying. They're just throwing stuff at the wall. So, I mean, that's why it's so confusing and so crazy right now. And it was funny. Ethan Westerman sent us an invite to a portal closing party on December 28th to celebrate the end of these 20 days of insanity.
I mean, but, you know, what's going to happen is that the bowl game's on the 27th. We're going to be driving mm-hmm. home on the 28th. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be somebody among us who's going to be the designated portal reporter.
Yeah.
And they're going to be stopping off at Forest City. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be like hoping that they can get a Wi-Fi signal at Carlisle. And they're going to be stopping off at Clarksville and at Ozark and at Alma and at Mulberry and at Rudy. So like all these people who, you know, day after the bowl game, okay, I'm hopping in on the last day of the transfer portal. It's, you know, and I look at it selfishly from a reporter standpoint. I get so tired of just chasing down the is he not?
With Braylon Russell, we talked last night about should we write a story about this? Because do we even trust at this point that he's actually in the portal?
Because I think from what I've been told, I don't think he's coming back to the team. Is he in the portal? I don't know. I don't think he's coming back to the team. But yeah, I mean, because the tweet that he put out, it's one of these cryptic tweets. Where somebody's looking for attention, it feels like, or looking for, you know, responses or whatever the word is. He didn't come out and say definitively, I am transferring away from Arkansas. That's what it reads like, but it's hard to say that with any, you know, sure definition.
Yeah, we roasted guys last week for writing long ChatGPT generated goodbye statements or I'm back statements. But here, now we've got one there. It's not quite clear enough.
I want to give them advice. I am transferring. Just say that. I am transferring. I have 2 years of eligibility left and I'm putting my name in the transfer portal. That's all you got to say. You don't have to tell us. Thank you to, you know, all these people and to this, but I'm transferring. That's all you gotta say.
They want,
it makes it so much easier.
Yeah.
Say it. I know what you're about to say because I want to make a point about this.
Well, I don't mind the like thanking people. They want to, you know, I feel like they probably want to dress it up and make it look a little bit nicer than it is.
What are they looking for?
Attention.
There you go. There you go. And that's the problem right now with, and I'm not going to be the grumpy old man that says that's the problem with this generation and this society. I might. But that's where I'm going. We are seeing, I think, a generation of people who have been brought up in social media. Mm-hmm. And they're what I call the like generation. Okay. So it's like the Instagram, the Facebook, all the, they want attention. And they get that attention in the recruiting process out of high school. And then they get to campus. And then that offensive line coach who showed me nothing but love during the recruiting process, and that head coach who showed me nothing but love during the recruiting process, and it was a family atmosphere. Well, then you get into the family, and the family can be a little disoriented, right? And so what happens is that, whoa, okay, now I'm not feeling what I felt a year ago whenever I went to this program. And so now I've got the opportunity to jump out of here and go somewhere else, and then I can get all that attention again. Mm-hmm. I can get all that attention from Ole Miss. I can get all that attention from the Texas fans. I can get all that attention from the Kentucky fans or whoever whatever your case might be. I can get that attention from the coaches, you know, yeah, who are recruiting me. I can get that attention whenever I put out there, hey, I'm committing to you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You get that dopamine rush, mm-hmm, that you don't get whenever your position coach is on your ass, mm-hmm, in a group meeting,
yeah,
you know? And so I think that's a lot of what's going on here, is that you have a lot of players who just can't handle the heat, so to speak. And it's like, well, you know, I need that dopamine rush again. I need to go through that process of being wanted and being pursued. Mm-hmm. And I can do it this year, and I can commit them for a year, and then I can do it again next year.
Yeah.
And I can do it again the year after that and the year after that. And there's no long-term thinking. It's all short-term thinking. But what you have at the end of your career is maybe a place, maybe no place to play, because there are so many players that are in the portal right now that there aren't enough roster spots to accommodate all of them. But then also longer term, you don't have any place to call home because you played for Team A and Team B and Team C and Team D and Team E. And, you know, you don't have any affiliation with one any more than the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think I always kind of wrestle with, I feel like there is a strong villainization of players who transfer. I think that, like, there is kind of the way that we talk, and I don't mean like you and me, but the way that people in general, I think the way that people in general talk about transfers, it's like, you're a bad person if you transfer. And I don't believe that. What I think is that, I think this, some of this has always been, I think it's a product of being, you know, 18 to 22, although maybe now up to 24 with how crazy eligibility is now. But I think it's a product of, when you're that age, I think you want, you know, like you said, the recruiting process, they make you feel really special because they want to sell you on their program. Then you get in and you're not special anymore. You're like everybody else. You have to earn your place. And I think players, for, you know, long before the transfer portal, long before the transfer rules changed, I think would have that kind of, they would come in and be dissatisfied. They would be kind of surprised and sort of shaken up by the fact that, hey, I've been the top dog. I was the top dog on my high school football team. I was the best guy in every room I walked into. And now I'm just like everybody else. And that's a hard thing. That's been a hard adjustment for players to make forever. They didn't have the option to get out. They kind of didn't have a choice but to, you know, stick around, try to, you know, fight and earn that place. And now they have the option to try to seek out better circumstances, I guess, better, you know, more playing time, things like that. Like you said, get back in, get recruited again, get coaches telling you you're really special again. And I think, you know, I think you're right. I think social media and the way that, you know, this generation, I, as part of that generation, the way that my generation sort of feels about things, I think that definitely informs it in part. But I think if this had happened even 15 years ago, we probably would have seen some similar things. They just, players didn't have a choice before.
Maybe.
Now they have the option. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good thing. It's just, I think we maybe would have seen a similar thing sooner.
There are players who need to transfer.
Yeah.
There are players who need to transfer that they're not in a good fit. And so, look, I totally understand that. But we wouldn't be having, mm-hmm, like you don't have 6,300 or whatever it is, people who need to transfer.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At some point, and it's, it, it sucks because you lump everybody together.
Right.
Right. So the people who need to transfer mm-hmm. or the people who just aren't in a good situation or you lump everybody together. You say they're all in it for money. I don't think all of them are in it for money. I really don't. I think that there are probably players who are going to leave Arkansas and they're going to go somewhere where they don't get as much NIL money mm-hmm. because they probably shouldn't have been at this level in the first place. Mm-hmm. Or at least they found out over the course of the last year or 2 years that they shouldn't have been at this level. And now they're going to transfer down to an FCS team mm-hmm. or they're going to transfer down to a group of five or somewhere else where NIL is not prominent like it is in the Power Four schools. But I think that there's a lot of people out there. It's just a cash grab.
And I think there's some good. I think it was Stephen Dix, right? Who he was the one. He came from Marshall, didn't he? And he spoke about how when he went from Florida State to Marshall to Arkansas, and he talked about how the Florida State coaches basically sat him down and said, "Hey, man, like you're more than welcome to stay, but like this is probably you're probably not going to see the field the way that you want to if you stay here." And they were, you know, they were. He said that they were good to him. You know, he appreciated that they did that rather than stringing him along. He went to Marshall. He did great at Marshall, and then he leveled back up to Arkansas, and now he's been, you know, he was a big contributor. He's going to be back next year. That's big for Arkansas. So, you know, I think there are. You're right that things kind of get all lumped together, but I do think there's instances where there's transfers that are beneficial for both sides.
I agree with that. Bottom line, you live by the portal, you die by mm-hmm. the portal, and you covered Clemson, and Clemson, they've caught so much crap for what they do in terms of not taking in a lot of transfers. I think it's the way to go about your program because the people who are covering them right now over in Greenville, they're not having to really go through this, right?
It was big news the other day because they had a transfer visitor on campus. It was a big deal. They got a visitor. I don't even remember. I think it was like an offensive lineman or something. And I don't know if he's even going to commit. I have no idea. I didn't follow it after that. But I got like an ESPN or something like push notification about it. It was such a big deal that they got a transfer visitor.
Is Clemson, they're the team that has the slide in their football mm-hmm. building?
Yeah. Yeah.
Transfer gets to go down the slide. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. Award-winning team of reporters and photographers bring subscribers the most trusted Razorback news. We have analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport. He's like a machine right now. And unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Clemson, they've got it figured out, I think. They've got it figured out. I don't know that they've got the type of culture problems that a lot of football teams have because they know what they're looking for in recruiting, and then they stay committed to them throughout
the
process, right?
They have a development problem.
Yeah.
They've
got a development problem?
Yes. They have. Well, the guys that are leaving there are, you know, and guys that have come out of there even and have gone on to professional careers have said, I didn't feel like I got very much better at Clemson. So that's a Clemson specific problem. You know, I don't know that that's necessarily a product of their lack of transfers or anything, but they have had guys leave. They don't have a lot of guys leave usually, but I think they're going to start to have more because I think Clemson is not going to be seen and they're in the playoff, you know, like they had a good year, whatever. I do think you're going to start to see the shine of Clemson wear off because part of the reason they didn't have that many guys transfer out is because Clemson was at the level of program that like, players would leave a team like in Arkansas, like on an Arkansas level, to go to a Clemson because Clemson was on that level with an Alabama, a Georgia, an Ohio State, whatever. I don't think they're going to be on that level over the next several years.
But they're in the playoff.
They are in the playoff, which is weird. They're in the playoff. They won the ACC.
See, I think if I was a fan, I would look at Clemson and I would say, that's what I want my program to be like mm-hmm. because they're always in the conversation. They don't have the transfer nonsense. They have a level of stability, I feel like, within their program where they don't have a whole lot of coaches coming and going. I mean, they had Brent Venables there as a defense coordinator for, what, 12, 13, something like that, 15 yeah. years, something like that. I mean, and you know, Chad Morris leaves, and then they've got two OC co-offensive coordinators who were, you know, in those roles for a long time as they were winning their championships, and they lost in a couple of championship games. And so, I don't know, I feel like that is the model of consistency that most – I would think that most fans would long to see in their program.
Yeah. It's interesting because within the Clemson, you know, fan base, at least in the season I covered them, was one of their worst in a while. And there was so much angst and sort of discussion within the fan base of people that were like, they're doing it the right way. They just need to, you know, keep at it basically. And guys that are like, why won't they adjust to the times? Why won't they start working on transfers. We could have so, you know, there was a lot of angst over how they didn't have good enough receivers. Why didn't we go get a great receiver out of the transfer portal? Why do we have these guys that, and there was a lot of angst over why aren't these guys getting any better? Why aren't they being developed? Like I said, they have a development problem. So, you know, I think there was angst within when people were looking to point fingers for why Clemson was falling off. It was very easy to look at it and say they aren't adjusting to the times. Dabo's too stuck in his ways. And that still kind of comes up, you know, as they have not been at the level that they were at, you know, with those great staffs.
One more thought on Russell. He commits to Arkansas in high school. Then he decommits. Then he recommits. And then he plays and he has a good game or two. And then he puts out an all call for a new agent. And then he gets in the portal. Then he gets out of the portal. Now he's back into the portal. I just feel like if you're a coach, you say, look, we've had enough of this. This is a distraction. We don't need these types of distractions in our program. It doesn't matter what your ceiling is, what your potential is. It's going to be better off for the program as a whole to move on from a player that never quite can figure out whether or not he's in or he's out.
Mm-hmm. So. I'll be interested if he, you know, wherever he commits next, if he speaks a little bit about kind of the situation and the circumstances of his transfer. Because, like, we can ask Coach Pittman about it, but, like, he's probably not. Coach Pittman, you know, somebody tried to ask about Patrick Kudus, like, what happened there, and he was like, I don't want to talk about individual players. Pittman doesn't want to badmouth his players, throw them under the bus, whatever, even after they've left. I get it. I'll be interested if players tend to take a different tact, and I'll be interested if he says anything.
But most of the players don't want to say anything either. And again, going back to this generation, you can't get them to take a phone call. Mm-hmm. Text me.
It's true.
Well, that's... Yeah. It's hard to do an interview through a text. We got a lot more to go. Razorbacks got some commitments over the weekend. We'll talk about where some of these former Razorbacks have ended up as well. Lots more. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. We put a poll up on our social media this morning. We asked, what was the more impressive feat from a pro hog on Sunday? You saw Dan Skipper caught a touchdown pass in that Lions-Bills game. But the one that I really thought was kind of interesting, Jeremiah Ledbetter, who's with the Jaguars now, sacked Aaron Rodgers, and then he's 330 pounds and does a backflip.
It was awesome. I've never seen anything like it, really. It was I hadn't heard about this until I saw the poll and you posted the videos, and I watched it and I was really surprised. Because it happens after the play. It's his celebration. And yeah, I've never seen anything. He doesn't stick the landing, but I don't even care. It was so good.
He's 330 pounds and he gets all that, you know, I mean, like over. I don't care if he didn't stick the landing. That's impressive. Yeah, just to be able to do that. 72% say that Dan Skipper's touchdown is the more impressive of the two.
I'm biased. Dan Skipper was always one of my favorite Razorbacks growing up. Like, he was a long family favorite. We loved Dan Skipper.
I'm going with Ledbetter. Really? I think that was look. I mean, both of them are really cool.
Yeah,
you got big linemen doing, you know, crazy things, but I'd go with Ledbetter.
Two perfect big man moments.
Yeah. There was almost another one yesterday. This was one of those. My son and I, we were watching Red Zone during a commercial break of the game that we were watching, and Montez Sweat, who's with the Titans now, he strips Joe Burrow as he's being tackled. He just takes the ball right out of his hands, and then he stiff arms one of the Bengals offensive tackles to the ground. I mean, this is like a 330-pound man that he just throws off of him like he's a rag doll.
Yeah.
And it was an incredible play. And I thought we were going to get a big man touchdown out of that one. Unfortunately, it did not happen. But, you know, Kyle Brandt does his Angry Run segment on NFL Network. That's got to be one of
them.
That's
awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I was excited to see the Dan Skipper touchdown just because, we always liked him in our house. And, you know, he's had some really cool moments in his NFL career before. It's been fun watching him. And I like the Lions. I don't really have an NFL team that I'm a fan of.
Buffalo out played Detroit at its own game yesterday. Yeah. They were more physical than Detroit. I thought that was, because a lot of people think that could be a Super Bowl matchup.
For sure. I do too. I mean, I think the Lions have been really fun and interesting. I like them. I like their coach. You're a Cowboys fan. I mean, how strongly are you a Cowboys fan?
Well, long term, I'm a big fan. Yeah. This year, this team does nothing to excite me.
Yeah.
Like I was watching them yesterday. They're up 27-7. It's just like, okay. I'm just like there's nothing about this year's team. I don't like how they play. They bring me no joy. Mm-hmm. I find myself watching them because that's what I've always done, but I just look at the TV the whole time and I'm just no joy.
Yeah. Yeah, we're a Saints household because Corey's a Saints fan. And so I've started watching the Saints a lot. Yesterday he was like, "The Saints are really bad." He was like, when they don't have a quarterback, they're really bad. And I was like, when they do have their quarterback, aren't they still bad? And he was like, they're not bad. They're just not good. Yeah. So we went to Saints at Giants when we were in New York, and it was really bad football. But it was a fun game because everyone around us was miserable. Like all the Saints and Giants fans everywhere was miserable. They were all miserable, and they were, there was trash talk going on where both sides were very aware of how bad their teams were.
So the Heisman was announced Saturday night. Christina and I both have a Heisman vote. You can't say what your vote is until the award is presented. You used to be able to, but there was this little website called stiffarmtrophy.com that would always scoop the Heisman ceremony. And so you knew who the Heisman winner was going to be before it was ever announced on television. I say they scooped them. What they did was they were able to get enough Heisman voters to respond to, a request to say, who did you vote for, that they were able to get a pretty good idea of who had won the award. And then, I don't know, somewhere in the last 10 years or so, if you're a Heisman voter, you were told, if you tell anybody your Heisman vote before Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern, you're going to lose your vote. So, that said, Travis Hunter wins the Heisman. Colorado two-way player, receiver, cornerback. He wins. Ashton Jeanty is second. I didn't see who finished third, but third or fourth.
It was Gabriel.
Okay, so Dylan Gabriel, I guess he was third, and then Cam Ward was fourth. They were the other two finalists who were invited to New York for that ceremony. All right, big moment, drum roll. Who'd you vote for?
I voted for Travis Hunter.
I voted for Jeanty.
You did?
I did.
I went back and forth on it a lot. I had a really hard time.
I didn't think there was a right or wrong answer between the two of them, because the way I look at it is that they both had a season that we haven't seen in a long time. Like, Travis Hunter, the last player I can think of that played two ways and had a good bit of success with it, at least at those two positions he plays, was Woodson, who won the Heisman in 97. Now, he played primarily defensive back, but he did play some receiver. What I thought was very impressive about Hunter was the fact that he played both ways really well. He's not the best receiver in the country, even though he did win the Biletnikoff. He's not the best cornerback in the country, but he's probably an All-American at both, first or second team, whatever you want to, I think he's probably going to get an All-American nod at both positions. And so he's playing pretty much the entire game without ever coming out, and he's doing it more than half the time at elevation, which is, that takes an extra level of physical preparedness, fitness, whatever you want to call it. And so we haven't seen anything like that, and who knows when the next time we're going to see it. Jeanty, same thing. I mean, he's putting up numbers that you haven't seen since Barry Sanders played
and
in 1988.
He only played in like the first half of a lot of those games because they would get up by so much. So it was later in the season that wasn't really so much the case. But early in the season, he was playing the first half and putting up insane numbers. It was really hard to decide.
Kind of flip a coin. I went with Jeanty.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been appalled to see either of them win the Heisman. It's one of those years, sometimes there's such an overwhelming favorite Like Jaden Daniels last year, there was nobody that was on his level or Joe Burrow or I would even say Devontae Smith the year that he won it. Sometimes it's like there are those players, and then, you know, there are the years that are like this, or like the Woodson Peyton Manning year, where it's like, hey, there's two or three people that are really deserving of this. And if they have this season any year, but this season that they're in, you know, they're a Heisman winner too.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was so hard to vote. And, you know, I voted last year. And yeah, so I've now gotten in my 2 years as a Heisman voter so far, I've gotten, you know, the two different kinds where it's a pretty easy pick and then a really, really hard pick. So it was hard to deliberate. I actually had Jenty was kind of my favorite for a while. And then when I actually sat down to do my voting and I actually sat down to look at it and think about it, I ended up going with Hunter just because of how we're seeing him do something that really has never been done on that level before. But Jenty, I mean, I also just really like Jenty. I think he's really I think he's a cool guy. I think he's a good player. I root for him. And not that I don't root for Travis Hunter, but I've just really enjoyed following the Ashton Jenty story coming from a school like Boise State. I loved that he wore all his Boise State. Yes. He wore all his Boise State garb to, you know, when they do their sort of photo shoot in Times Square, you know. I think he's got such a cool story, but it is not a narrative award. But I did really, you know, I struggled with who to vote for. But yeah, I put him second.
He was the only of the finalists who had not transferred.
Yeah.
The others had transferred at least once. Dylan Gabriel had transferred two times. Mm-hmm. Jenty stayed at Boise State. And I think that's pretty admirable because you know that he had chances to go elsewhere. So now the way the Heisman works is that you get three votes. You say, this is my number one. This is my number two. This is my number three. And then when they go in and they count up the ballots, any number one vote gets 3 points. Any number two gets two. Any number three gets one. Who was third on your ballot?
Third on my ballot was Cam Ward. And I didn't think it was going to be Cam Ward because I was not a Cam Ward lover throughout the season. I just felt like, you know, he's really good. He puts up great numbers, but he's also good for some just kind of boneheaded, weird plays. So I had thought, just, you know, like I said before, when I was kind of just conceptualizing my ballot before I actually sat down to look at everything and really vote, I was kind of like, okay, maybe I'll go with Gabriel. I wasn't sure what to do at three. And then when I actually compared him with Gabriel, Ward had better numbers. I didn't want to go, I guess I didn't, you know, Gabriel led his team to an undefeated, you know, great season, but I didn't want to give it to just best quarterback on best team. So I ended up going with Ward. Still probably could have gone other directions. I didn't even have to pick a quarterback. I know there were a lot of people that didn't. I know you didn't. A lot of people put Cam Scataboo from Arizona State, who I really like. Bryson Daly finished sixth from Army, which was interesting.
Clay Henry had him third on his ballot.
Really? Yeah. Okay, interesting. Yeah. There were so many different directions you could have gone. And, you know, I haven't decided what my strategy is going to be for my number three. You know, a lot of people will like to give it to a nod to somebody that they know is not going to probably finish in the top three, but somebody like they feel like you did.
Like I did.
Yeah. Who's your number three?
Kelvin Banks, the tackle from Texas.
Did he fit? He wasn't in the top 10.
No, he wasn't in the top 10 because nobody watches line play.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. This guy is one of the very best players in the country. He's one of those that whenever the NFL draft comes around in a few months, he's going to be like, you know, second, third, fifth off the board. He's that good. Yeah. He is the type of tackle that you draft. And then if he can stay healthy, he's still playing for you in 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
Because you keep wanting, hey, we want to keep that guy. Because he's been so good for us. I think of all the players that I've seen in the country this year, he is one of the top probably two can't miss prospects in terms of draft.
Yeah, there's not besides Hunter, who obviously plays both ways, there's no other defensive player in the top 10. And it, you know what's crazy to me? Kyle McCord from Syracuse finished 10th.
Yeah, that was kind of surprising.
What is he doing there?
Okay. So, I like Kelvin Banks. I talked about him a lot whenever Arkansas, when we were leading up to that game with Texas and then after the game. I was very, very impressed watching him in person against Landon Jackson, who I think is going to be a high draft pick. Banks just pretty much had his way with him during that game. And then all the other games when I'd watch Texas, my eyes would kind of gravitate toward that tackle. And it's like, wow, that guy is good. Mm-hmm. He is really good. So he got number three on my ballot. Moving back to transfers here for a minute, Arkansas got some commitments over the weekend. Fresno State receiver Raylan Sharp is coming to Arkansas. He actually played at Missouri State when Bobby Petrino was the head coach there. Ronnie Fouch, who's Arkansas's receivers coach, was also on that Missouri State staff. So Sharp coming to Arkansas. this year at Fresno, 51 catches, 523 yards, 3 touchdowns. Razorbacks also got a commitment over the weekend from Kenai Walker. He is a cornerback from Oklahoma. Started 8 games there this season. I think he may have lost a starting job toward the end of the season, but a former starter in the SEC that they get at corner. We told you the other day about Jaquan McRoy. It's Jaquan, not Jaquan. I looked it up. He's committed to him. And then they've gotten a couple of junior college commitments, a cornerback, Kashawn Davila from Northwest Mississippi Community College, and an offensive lineman. This was actually announced as part of their signing class a week or so ago. Bubba Craig from Hutchinson Community College up in Kansas. Transferring out, Lucas is now at Ole Miss. That was announced the other day. 3 Razorbacks are going down to Oxford. Brad Spence, the linebacker, he's going to Texas. Good luck seeing the field there. That one really kind of blew my mind.
I was really surprised by that.
Josh Braun, the offensive lineman. This is not a surprise to us. We even mentioned this on the show last week that we had heard Kentucky was a team that was in the running for him. So that's where he has committed to, is to the Wildcats. And looks like, you know, pretty much everybody else that we haven't talked about previously, they're still uncommitted.
Yeah.
And you wonder if some of them are going to get an opportunity.
Right. I mean, some of them, it's hard to know. I mean, when there's this many people in the portal, you know, a lot of them are probably not going to get some of the options they thought that they would. And, you know, like Coach Pittman said, if they left the right way, if Arkansas feels like they can use them, if he feels like they do want to stay, then they could be, some might be allowed back. But, you know, we're going to see so many commitments over the next, I feel like a lot of the portal entries, like the wave of portal entries is over, but now we're going to have all the commitments and all of the new things. One thing we're doing on our website is we do kind of a commitment analysis on all these guys, try to talk to somebody who covered them at their previous school and get a little bit more detail on them. So I've been working on a lot of those, going to try to talk to somebody from Fresno State about Raylan Sharp.
You talked to somebody about Jaquan McRoy.
I did, right. From Oregon. Yeah. So McRoy did not play at Oregon. He was a true freshman. And the idea was basically that he came in, he's, you know, huge guy. They felt really good about him, very athletic for his size, but they did want to kind of trim him down a little bit, spend that first season kind of working with him developmentally. But the idea was that, you know, he was the highest rated offensive lineman in their class when he signed. And the idea was that, yeah, he was going to be a really good piece for them in the future. You know, I asked the writer that I talked to, you know, is this considered a loss for Oregon, or is this just kind of, you know, another guy hitting the portal? And he was like, no, I do think this is a loss, given that he was such a highly rated offensive lineman out of high school, and they really wanted to develop him. You know, he's from Alabama. He was real far from home in Oregon. But, you know, now what I'm curious to see is, I would be interested what Arkansas told him. Did they tell him, we think you are going to come in and compete right away, or we want to bring you in and this is what we can do to develop you this year, and we think you can be ready after that? I'd be interested kind of what the expectation for him is there. Because, yeah, I mean, I think he has all the potential in the world. He has tons of athleticism. I found him scoring on a 2-point conversion in high school. It looks a little bit like the Dan Skipper play. So it's interesting. You know, he's got the athleticism. He can move, especially relative to how big he is. He's 6'8", 375. And the writer I talked to said he's kind of like your prototypical, you know, the way that you want that position to look. So it's really interesting to see, as they try to rebuild this offensive line, how a guy like that, how this junior college guy, Bubba Craig, you know, what the expectation is going to be for them.
A couple of other notes from the weekend. We'll say this one first. 2 Razorbacks, Brooks Edmondson and Maddox Lassiter, have been put on scholarship. Those are a couple of in-state players. Edmondson, a lineman from Bryant. Lassiter, a tight end from Warren. That's, you know, part of that is just you've got the scholarships that have opened up with players moving on. And so, you know, there's always players that you feel like in your program are worthy of a scholarship. And so they've elevated these 2 players. I mentioned before, I think the more players you can have from your state who wanted to play for you and can be on your team, it's a good thing. And so you elevate a couple of players who I think really want to be here. And so that's nice to see for them. And then Texas Tech announced over the weekend that its starting quarterback, Baron Morton, is going to miss the Liberty Bowl against Arkansas. He underwent elective shoulder surgery last Tuesday in Los Angeles. He said that he thought it was the best time to undergo this surgery because it would allow him to go through spring practice. This is a good quarterback. I mean, his numbers are really good. It doesn't really surprise you with Tech. And I mean, Tech's quarterbacks are always among the highest passing yards, touchdowns, things like that nationally. But this year, 63% completion percentage, a little over 3,300 yards, 27 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, one of the best touchdown to interception ratios in the country when you, you know, like minimum however many passes. He ranked 10th nationally in passing yards. The Red Raiders are going to start a true freshman, Will Hammond, against Arkansas. Is it next week? It is next week.
Oh, my gosh. Boy. Christmas is next week.
Christmas is next week. Next week in Memphis.
I got to wrap some gifts.
The true freshman. True freshman Will Hammond from Austin.
And he was a highly rated guy out of high school.
I think so. He hadn't played a whole lot this year. No. He only played in 3 games.
Yeah, didn't get to do a lot this year. It's Ethan and I were kind of combing through Texas Tech trying to figure out depth chart stuff after we saw this news with Morton. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they have another quarterback because the two behind him are reportedly in the portal.
Mm.
So if he goes down... I don't think there's a walk-on. Exactly. Like, because there's not even, like, a walk-on on the roster. Like, he is the one guy that they have right now.
You know, and keep in mind, Texas Tech, their offensive coordinator got hired at FAU as their head coach a week or two ago. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder how similar the offense is going to look like. That's the thing about these bowl games. I mean, the best thing I can compare them to are Monday night JV football games. That's what this is going to look like because Arkansas is down however many starters, 12, 13, whatever it is now. Texas Tech, they're not going to be down as many starters, but they're without their starting quarterback, which that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. My family, we do like a bowl pick 'em. You know, we pick the winner of every game.
Hope you don't put any money on it.
We don't.
That's good.
We just do it for fun. We like to do bragging rights. Same thing we do with March Madness. And it's especially funny because the people that end up winning are usually people that did not watch that much college football this year. But it was hard to pick a lot of these games and just try to keep track of who was even going to play, whose coach is still there. I know we'll probably get into picks for Arkansas, Texas Tech, you know, next week, but I had to pick that game and I didn't really know what to do because I do feel like it could go really either way. Because Texas Tech, it looked like was going to have a really intact team.
I thought so too.
Before Morton.
And we still don't know what their running back, Taj Brooks, is going to do.
Right.
I don't think that he's made a decision one way or the other. He may have made a decision. He just hasn't made it public.
Right.
And a lot of times you get into this. Who was it? I think Treylon Burks was kind of like this, wasn't he, before the Outback Bowl?
Yeah.
And he didn't announce it until about a week before
the game.
Kind
of thought he might actually play.
And I think Penn State might have had a player or two like that year that did that. So it's crazy.
Yeah. So we'll have to see who actually is on either side of the field for this game. But that's the case for everybody.
Christina, appreciate you being here. When we come back, Anthony Christensen is going to be here. We'll talk about Arkansas basketball and the win over UCA over the weekend. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Anthony Christensen covers Razorback basketball, and he's here on the set with us. The Razorbacks defeated UCA 82-57 over the weekend. That game was played down in North Little Rock at Simmons Bank Arena. Arkansas now 9-2. As we speak, we haven't seen the AP top 25. I think there's probably a decent chance Arkansas gets back into the rankings this week after a pretty good week last week, beating Michigan on a neutral floor in New York and beating UCA you know, about the way you would expect them to beat UCA. They were totally out, I don't know what would be the word, athletically, they totally outmanned
UCA. Absolutely, yeah.
The best picture I saw, Hank Layton, our photographer, got it, and it's Jonas Adu being double-teamed, maybe triple-teamed. There's a guy that's kind of shading over his way. And I mean, it looks like dad playing with the kids in the in the driveway. Adu is just totally towering over these guys. I mean, they may come up to his belly button. And it's crazy how just athletically different Arkansas looked from UCA.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of what you expect, especially, you know, going up against a UCA team that's in the middle of a pretty big rebuild, right? John Shulman's first season there after a few, you know, quite frankly, bad years down in Conway. He's a good coach. Obviously, five Division II NCAA tournament appearances in 5 years at Alabama Huntsville. And they run some good stuff, right? I mean, Lane Taylor, he's a shooter. I mean, I was most impressed by his passing ability. So, I mean, you give that some time, I think you might be looking at a much brighter outlook there in Conway. But I mean, that's obviously always going to be a tough build in year one. But, like you said, I mean, Arkansas just completely outmatched them from a size. I wrote a lot about the size difference, and just kind of how Arkansas took advantage of that. And then just athletically, I mean, Arkansas was much, much, much more athletic.
You know, you're going to play some of these teams. You can't have a schedule of just top of the top teams. You just can't, but there's reasons for that. Number one, it kills you from, you know, a record standpoint, or it can kill you from a record standpoint whenever it comes time to play or be selected for March Madness. Number two, there's a budgetary, you know, standpoint here that you can't pay everybody six figures to come in and play you. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to have some budget games, and that's what this is. That's what Maryland Eastern Shore was. It's probably what North Carolina A&T is when they come in here on Saturday. But UCA and Eastern Shore from an RPI net, what are we using for basketball now? Net?
Is that net? Yeah, net.
I mean, they're both really, really low.
Yeah, very low. Ratings. Yeah. Yeah. No. And then, I mean, obviously, the net is more of like a sorting tool more than a ranking.
How many teams are in Division I basketball now?
364.
Like, okay. And both of these teams are probably 320, 330 and below?
In the net, I'm not sure, but probably. In KenPom, they're both sub-320. Eastern Shore, I think, is 358 now. And Central Arkansas, I believe, was 325 going into that game. So, in KenPom. And I'm a KenPom head. I always use KenPom. So
we'll talk a little bit more about the game here in just a second. But at the end of the game, John Calipari broke a little bit of news on his post-game radio show. He was talking about Arkansas and playing in North Little Rock, playing in New York earlier in the week. And, you know, we know this about Calipari. He's a coach who likes these one-off neutral site games. We've seen it this year, whether it be New York or the game in North Little Rock or the game against Baylor in Dallas, the game against Illinois in Kansas City. And he was discussing all those, and then he dropped this.
Thanksgiving Day game had 5.1 million viewers. We're doing it again next year. I can't tell you who it is yet, but it's ridiculous. It's in Chicago, so I can give you that. Start planning on being in Chicago. And that game, my guess, will be 6 million we'll watch.
So Thanksgiving Day 2025, Arkansas is going to play in Chicago. That's what we get from that. When he says 6 million, and you heard there at the start where he says 5.1 million watch this year, that was on CBS. That's the average viewer for the game. So the way the Nielsen ratings work is that they measure every 15 or 30 minutes. I think it's every 15. And then they take, you know, from start to finish, however many people were watching that game, and they give you an average, and that's what that number is. So there were 5.1 million average viewers for the Arkansas-Illinois game. If you're talking about 6 million, there's only a handful of teams that are going to get you to that point. And so, you know, by process of elimination, you can narrow down, I think, pretty quickly the types of teams that we're talking about. You're talking about the Blue Bloods and not Kentucky, because that's a conference team that you're not going to play out of conference. You're talking about a Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, UConn, Gonzaga. I mean, those are probably the only teams I can think of that are going to have a coach saying that we're going to have 6 million people watching this game.
Yeah, and I think I told you this. If I had a guess, it would probably be Gonzaga because I think Duke is my guess. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I know Duke has played some games in Chicago.
Well, so and the stunning, Champions but. Classic rotates between Chicago, New York, and Atlanta. Next year, it's in New York. Mm-hmm. And so I think all of these teams, they like having an annual presence in those. Doesn't mean they're always going to get there, mm-hmm. but I think they like having an annual presence in those towns. And so, you know, like if the Champions Classic is in New York, then they got to find a way to get to Chicago and play somebody else. There's a big Duke following in Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, all those cities too are big recruiting grounds too. But I know he talked, I think, in his July press conference about maybe trying to do something with Mark Few and Gonzaga. So that's kind of where I drew that conclusion. Mm. But I mean, it's not like he hasn't done anything with Duke or with Kansas. Obviously, Kansas having the preseason exhibition at Bud Walton. So maybe that's another thing they do. But obviously, I mean, the way he said it, I mean, it makes it sound like it's going to be quite the team that they're going to have. Maybe a UConn too. I don't know if you said UConn.
Yeah, UConn. That's one of the teams that I said. The 5 point and while let me back up. He also wants to play at Madison Square Garden next year. UConn likes playing at Madison Square Garden. They played Gonzaga there the other night. Great game between those two teams. So this is what we're going to see from Arkansas. It's not going to be a lot of home and home stuff. It's going to be a lot of one-off neutral site stuff. I mean, that's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. They do get Baylor at Bud Walton Arena next year, but I feel like that is more the exception than it is the rule in terms of playing notable teams in your building. And they may get an ACC-SEC challenge at home next year, too,
because they went on the road this year. They went on the road, and they hosted Duke last year. So I would assume it would be a home game next year against, I mean, probably one of the more upper echelon ACC teams.
In that 5.1 million that watched on CBS for the Arkansas-Illinois game, it was the second highest viewed regular season college basketball game since 2008. The only game that had more viewers was the year before on Thanksgiving. Michigan State and Arizona on Fox had 5.2 million viewers. So you see what they're doing on Thanksgiving. They're piggybacking off of these NFL games. I don't know if it'll be played on the front end or on the back end of an NFL game, but they're certainly using, you know, the opportunity, but that there's a lot of eyeballs on these NFL games. Cowboys Giants played a couple of years ago on Thanksgiving. 42 million people is what averaged watching that game. And so if you can just get a fraction of that audience, you're really doing something. And I think it's smart by Calipari saying, hey, we're going to go play on Thanksgiving and we're going to get our brand in front of people who may not watch a lot of Arkansas basketball otherwise. That's whether or not it builds Arkansas from a national perspective, we'll see. But that's the way that he built Kentucky. That's the way that he built Memphis.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's that you kind of covered all the bases there. And I mean, obviously he doesn't need any help with recruiting. I mean, he's always been kind of this big time recruiter, but I'm sure that's a nice plus when you're talking to kids who you want to get to play for you. Like, hey, we're going to be playing, you know, on national television for mm-hmm. 6 million people to be watching. So I'm sure that helps. But yeah, I mean, I won't say no to trips to Chicago or New York or wherever, but yeah, assuming I get to go, of course. But yeah.
So Arkansas won 4 in a row after this win the other day. And this one was unlike the other wins because in this one, Arkansas jumps out big and they never gave UCA any chance. So Arkansas gets up 22-7. They scored on 10 of their first 11 possessions. Now, they didn't make 10 of their first 11 shots. There were some second chance shots that were in there. But they just came out and totally started throwing haymakers at UCA and never gave UCA any chance in this game. Calipari talked about the fact that the team was prepared, and this is what he had to say after the game. We were having some trouble with our audio there, but basically what Calipari said was that on Friday they had a really good practice inside Bud Walton Arena or in Fayetteville. I don't know if he said the arena or not, but in Fayetteville, he said that he really liked how they were in shoot around Saturday before the game. And so he thought they were really prepared for this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think I mentioned it on Friday when I talk to you on the podcast or Saturday or Friday. We don't do podcasts on the weekends.
Not yet.
I think I'd mentioned it, like you'd want to see that kind of a performance, you know, after that Michigan game and against a team like this where you're not, I guess, hung over from, you know, that big time comeback win against Michigan and maybe lay an egg and play poorly or even lose against a Central Arkansas. That was important. I mean, they got out to that big lead, like you said, scored on 10 of their first 11 possessions. I think they started 9 of 11 from the field, and the two misses they got, I think they scored on offensive rebounds, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, that's the kind of game that you frankly should have against, you know, Central Arkansas team that's in the middle of a big time rebuild. It was a good performance, which I mean, I think you can take that away from that game. It's not like a Maryland Eastern Shore where you walk out and you're just like, well, that was kind of pointless. I think you can actually have genuine takeaways from this one.
Well, and I thought for Arkansas, like, there was never a moment where, like every media timeout after that first one, Arkansas had built its lead a little bit more. It might have gone from a 15-point game to a 16-point game, or from, 20 to 22. But, like, they couldn't quite pull away from UCA. And I think, as Calipari talks about teaching moments, I feel like there's probably a little bit of frustration, the fact that they weren't, because it looked for a little while they might beat that team by 40, 50 points. Mm-hmm. And so to, only in quotation marks, meet him by 25, I think that there's a lot of coaching that can come out of watching that game film.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I mentioned it in my takeaway story yesterday, like they fouled 4 3-point shooters. That just can't happen. But for the most part, like I said, I think it's mostly positive. Central Arkansas, I mean, they've got shooters on that team. I mean, I mentioned Lane Taylor earlier, Braden Fagmemi, Ben Fox can also play as well. And he mentioned the way they play defense, the way they press and switch and everything had him worried, John Calipari. Mm-hmm. This game never really felt like it was in doubt at all. So I think by and large, it's a positive experience.
And Noah Duthiro for Arkansas, he was out. Calipari said after the game that his fever spiked after he played for 22 minutes up in Madison Square Garden against Michigan. We talked about this last week. He had the flu for that game, and so they didn't practice him after they got home from Michigan. They did take him through shoot-around Saturday. There was some thought that he would be available if he needed to play, but they didn't need him in this game because they got up by so much. Arkansas shot 33 of 55 from the floor, 9 of 20 from three. Yeah, I mean, you look across the stat lines, and it's just all Arkansas, 44 to 18. In points in the paint, 21 to nothing points in transition. And then UCA, they were held to, from an Arkansas standpoint defensively, these are numbers that you're pleased with. 18 to 54, that's 33% from the field, 7 of 28, that's 25% from three. UCA probably shoots the three as much as any team Arkansas is going to see this year or right there. Added. I think they played a game against Utah earlier this year where they combined for 90 three-pointers between the two of them. Boogie Flan, 16 points. He set a career high with 9 assists, also a career high with 5 steals, 5 rebounds. Calipari keeps saying that he's going to get a triple-double at some point. Carter Knox had a nice game, 14 points in 22 minutes. DJ Wagner scored 13. Jonas Adu, it just feels like we're seeing him. We're starting to see the type of Adu that we saw at Tennessee the previous couple of years. He's coming along from that foot injury that he had, 13 points, 6 rebounds, 2 blocks in 24 minutes. Brazil had a nice game, 11 points and 7 rebounds and 5 block shots. They Adu and Brazil are much different types of inside players. And Avisic, the same, especially defensively. He can block a shot. But Adu, he's the closest to a bruiser that you have inside. And I feel like the last couple of games, you're starting to see him look more like what they thought they were getting out of Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I had asked John Calipari about, him getting to full strength or close to full strength afterward. And he said he's still not there. He's started to look really good. He was phenomenal against Michigan and obviously was very good against Central Arkansas, albeit standing 7 feet taller than everybody else on the floor. But, you know, I mean, that's what you want, right? I mean, you bring in a guy like Jonas Adu to, you know, have that really strong inside presence. He didn't miss a shot from the field. I think he missed one free throw, but, you know, he's perfect from the field. I thought he was good defensively. And, I mean, against Michigan, I mean, he was getting out. He was running. He was playing well defensively. Very good inside player as well. So you want that. And then you get North Carolina A&T and Oakland coming up before conference play actually begins at Tennessee, funnily enough. Where you can see...
Funnily? Is that a word?
I think so.
Funnily.
Huh. Is it?
Interesting.
I think so, right?
Yeah, we're getting nods from the control room. Funnily, is it? No? No, it's not.
It's not? Google's telling me it is.
Okay. Well, funnily enough, continue.
So get a little bit of a homecoming, I guess, in that. But, I mean, you want to use these next two games. I mean, North Carolina A&T is probably going to be pretty similar to Central Arkansas in the sense that, you know, it's a game that you really shouldn't have any issues with. Shouldn't. I mean, obviously, college basketball is weird, and sometimes you lay an egg and everything like that. And Oakland is obviously a much better team than both Central Arkansas. Excuse me, goodness. Central Arkansas and North Carolina A&T. So it's going to be more challenging in that game, but it's another game that you should win. So I think you want to continue to see Jonas Adu kind of take those steps towards being fully healthy, maybe get John L. Davis, you know, going again, and some stuff along those lines. But I've been impressed by Jonas Adu in the last couple games for sure.
North Carolina A&T is 3-8 coming in here. And, you know, and we've mentioned this before. You're in that time now where you don't have a whole lot of games. I mean, they play on the 21st, then they don't play again until the 30th, then they don't start SEC play until January 4th. And so it's a lot of practice time. And there's also going to be a lot of downtime for the players too. Calipari said that once the game against North Carolina A&T is over this weekend, players are going to get to go home for Christmas, and they're not due back to Fayetteville till the 26th. And I feel like that's going to be a very welcome break. And anytime you can get your players refreshed, I think is going to be big for your team. Because not every team schedules in a way that the players can get away for an extended period of time like that.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure that'll be nice. I mean, the college basketball kind of cycle can be a little bit of a grind. I mean, you're on campus from July until your season pretty much ends. So, I mean, getting some time off to go home, see family and everything for the holidays, I'm sure will be nice for them. And frankly, getting some time off from games as well. Obviously, just this game on Saturday and then a full week off before they play against Oakland. But, I mean, that's going to be a good time for them to get healthy. Obviously, you're going to want to do Thero to get over his illness if he hasn't already. Keep Jonas Adu, you know, trending closer and closer to full health. And stuff like that. So, I mean, this is a good time for them to be getting, you know, that, I guess, taken care of.
I want to ask you about your full AP poll. We'll talk about that tomorrow, not okay. today. But just leave us on this. Arkansas, are they in it?
They are in it, yes.
Where'd you rank them?
24.
24. All right. Yes. We'll find out a little bit later today if Arkansas made it back into the AP top 25. I got a feeling they're in there. I think the win over Michigan was very, very impressive the other day. All right. We'll see you again for a podcast tomorrow. Who knows what the heck will happen between now and then? I mean, so much transfer nonsense. It's just daily and it's never ending. And you can catch up on all of it on our website at wholehogsports.com. You can find our podcast by searching Whole Hog Sports on YouTube, Spotify, Apple. We also post it on our Twitter and Facebook pages. Anywhere, any of those places, just search Whole Hog Sports, all one word, and you can find our latest podcast. Hope we'll see you again tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.